Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 13th of February 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. Well, it's cold and very chilly here in Plymouth, and that seems to be the report from a lot of places across the country. So we'll leave the coldness because we've got good news. If you thought that we haven't really got a functioning UK government, don't worry, because
we're getting a world government. So here we go. The World Government Summit 2017 is taking place today. Well, it started yesterday, ends tomorrow. Well, for anybody that doesn't know what the World Government Summit is, they say they have a mission. Their mission is to improve the lives of citizens across the world. But how are they going to do that? Well, apparently they're going to shape future governments, Brian. So this summit is all about shaping future governments. That's what we'd like to see.
These unelected people are going to shape our governments to help us.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the World Government Summit is a non-government body that aspires to continuously improve the lives of citizens across the world by empowering organisations with the knowledge to shape a better future. This is exactly what Martin Edwards and I have been talking about in a whole host of articles on the UK Column website. This is about the participatory democracy model where individuals such as you and I do not participate, Brian. It is non-governmental bodies that participate. They push policy into government, or government ask them for policy. We'll be coming onto that later on.
So this is the NGOs, this is the think tanks, this is the charities. Never been elected, no elected representatives in those bodies, but they are the ones that are going to be helping the government shape their policies.
Absolutely. So let's have a look at World Government Summit in numbers. What have we got here? 90-plus speakers, 4,000-plus attendees, 130-plus participating countries. We've got 100-plus distinguished speakers from across the globe. Who's that in the bottom left there? Christine Lagarde. Is she not a criminal?
No, because she's too senior to be a criminal, so they didn't really bother to charge her. I think she's immune.
Okay. Well, I think she was actually found guilty, but anyway, that's...
No charges.
Well, possibly. Let's move on. 36 reputed partners share their vision. So let's just have a look and see what the vision is. The vision for humanity, and this is what they say. In 2013, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, through his prescient vision, commissioned the establishment and launch of the World Government Summit, a global knowledge exchange program for governments. Thus, the summit was created and incubated by a team of experts gathered from different disciplines. It was designed to be on the cutting edge of futurism, policy making, technology, service delivery and innovation in an effort to bring government, business and civil society disciplines together under one umbrella. The World Government Summit ushers in a new era of responsibility where governments can serve humanity better and in more sustainable ways. I take it that makes you feel warm.
Well, a lot of people now saying, Mike, that for the world to be sustainable, we've got to remove a large number of human beings.
Well,
so I'm not sure that sustainability thing gives me a warm feeling.
Indeed. So look at the 36 reputed partners. What have we got here? The International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, the OECD. Who else have we got? DP World, a couple of people that I don't recognise here. We've got the Landmark Group, we've got Lulu, Gems Education, Aramex, Nirvana, Emirates. Then we get into the main corporate interests, Harvard Business Review, McKinsey & Company, A.T. Kearney, and Popular Science Magazine, CNN, Sky News, and so on. So the list goes on. So these are the 36 reputed partners who share the vision to create new governance right around the world.
And I'm surprised that Channel 4 isn't there because, of course, Channel 4's mission is to change our world. It's nothing to do with telling the truth or good news. It's going to change our society, change our world. Probably in line with this, I would anticipate.
Absolutely. So Irina Bokova, the Director General of UNESCO, was speaking today. And somebody else is speaking today, Joe Stiglitz, of course, world-renowned economist. He is particularly concerned about tackling the rise and fall of global economic governance. So he wants global economic governance. We're facing a real challenge, he said, undermining the common agreement of what is truth.
So still a bit of misunderstanding as to what truth is.
Yes, a bit difficult. Yeah. And one of the other things that's being discussed today is, in a world driven by technology and man being replaced by machine, how can we all stay happy, Brian? Because that is the key thing. It doesn't matter what kind of rubbish is coming down on our heads, so long as we're always happy about it.
Well, they're already starting on that, Mike, because, of course, we've got mindfulness. We can't be happy on our own. Human beings simply don't have that capacity. You have to do a mindfulness course. NHS offering these, so they're going to make us happy through mindfulness. And, of course, we've also seen pushing of, I'll say, pharmaceutical, in inverted commas, drugs in order to make us happy. So I think they know how to make us happy. We should just relax.
Yes, quite possibly. We'll have more on this tomorrow.
I'm smiling. I don't know how to stop smiling because this is just so obvious.
Yes. Okay, we'll have more on this tomorrow. But anyway, let's move on. The continuing attack on the House of Lords seems to be ramping up again. Daily Mirror here, 29 peers claimed almost £750,000 in expenses without speaking a word in the House of Lords. Of course, this is the House of Lords' own expenses scandal, and we've got to throw out the whole House of Lords because of a few people claiming
abusing the system.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Got to throw it out. And then the other fake news headline, I suppose we could say, in the Express, new bid to wreck EU exit, fury as Lords plot assault on Theresa May's Brexit bill. So again, this is another non-story, but designed to bring up bad feelings about the House of Lords amongst the population. To be honest, we've got to try to understand what our common law institutions are, what they represent, not be throwing them away on the basis of bogus headlines from newspapers.
Yeah, so this comes down to education of the wider population about the protections our constitution gives and common law. Bring in Nick Clegg. Well, we're going to be mentioning young Nicholas with regards to defence in a second, but in doing a little bit of research, it's best not to forget what he's been up to. And this was a very good article in The Spectator with the headline, "Do As I Say, Not As I Do, Nick Clegg's Privy Council Double Standards." Now, of course, remember that all those Privy Council meetings are in secret. We, the public, we're just too small, too insignificant to be allowed to know what goes on behind closed doors. And Nick Clegg, one of the major players. Well, this is the point The Spectator was making, that Clegg had expressed outrage that Privy Council members would dare to divulge details of private conversations with the Queen. And why would he be worried about that sort of thing? Well, a book written by David Laws called Coalition, The Inside Story on the Conservative Liberal Democrat Coalition Government, recalls a conversation between Clegg, who was then Deputy Prime Minister, and the Queen about plans, quote, to change the rules on royal succession. It's interesting that Clegg, when he was made leader of the Lib Dems, he said that he wanted to change politics and change Britain. But he doesn't actually tell us what he wants to do. But there he is behind closed doors with the Privy Council discussing it with the Queen. And what sort of man is Clegg? Well, let's remember that this man was put into power by none other than Leon Britton. So we can safely say that Nick Clegg was one of Liam Britton's European boys, I think is the best way of doing it. But this is Clegg. He was interviewed. This was reported in the Mail. He said he drunk too much. He was irresponsible, criminal. He is a Privy Councillor. Nick Clegg, on his regrets of cross-dressing, drugs, the remark about his 30 lovers, and finally the truth about his criminal past, the hilariously indiscreet confessions of Nick Clegg, the Lib Dem leader who tries hard not to embarrass himself, but happily just can't help it. So this is a typical mainstream media story, that it's all a bit jokey, it's all a bit silly. But this man who says, well, bit of a drunkard, bit of a, okay, he was only a teenager, but some criminal incident, I think to do with cacti, is then behind closed doors deciding what's going to happen with our constitution.
The mind boggles.
The mind does boggle. Probably his did. And we're also going to bring up that political charity common purpose. Now, this falls in line with that government system that you've just detailed, Mike, because, of course, this is exactly the sort of non-government organisation, charity organisation, that is now responsible for shaping government. And back in 2007, Julia Middleton, the chief executive, said, "I know that in Downing Street, they're always wondering whether people have sufficient guile to be brought into a coalition the government is building." So remarkable coincidence. 2007, she's talking about a coalition. 2007, Nick Clegg becomes leader. He's talking about constitutional change. This is how it's done. And this is the power of these groups, the ordinary voter, simply little people the government's not interested in. So what are we going to do about it? Well, let's give our viewers and listeners today a reminder of the British Constitution Group meeting on the 22nd of April. Mike, you've just said at the World Government Forum there, they're going to have 4,000 delegates. I think they probably got a little bit more money to play with than the British Constitution Group, but the British Constitution Group is providing an opportunity for 1,000 people to come together to help put a stop to this nonsense. So there we are, Nottingham, good position, central in the country. And what a wonderful space and opportunity for people who are waking up and concerned as to what's going on to come together to do something. And we'll just reinforce that by saying, if you followed our reports last week on this disgraceful episode of cutting down trees in Sheffield, there's some really excellent work that the group in Sheffield are doing. This is a sort of timeline showing how this whole plan has been cooked up by Sheffield City Council. And if you freeze the screen and have a look at that address, you can go and see the agenda in detail. And of course, what is this about? Well, it's not Sheffield Council working for local people. This is Sheffield Council dictating.
Before we move on, just one other quick advertisement, because Ian Crane's Fracking Nightmare programme, bit on a fluid schedule at the moment because of what's going on at the Kirkby Mispirden fracking camp, anti-fracking camp. But tonight we will have an episode of that at 7:30. So 7:30 p.m. ukcolumn.org/live.
Okay, and important stuff because it's all detailing people who are out there taking action, and that's the thing that conquers the fear. Well, back to Nick Clegg, and this is the headline from the Express. Nick Clegg admits Brussels is building an EU army, and Putin has blacklisted him from Russia. Just deal with that last bit first. Of course, Nick Clegg claims he's 25% Russian, but he didn't really like Putin. So at one point he was part of the team trying to dictate to the Russians how to govern their country, but really he's been booted out. Well done, the Russians. Unfortunately, we've still got him, and he's had to admit now that there is a European military coming. Now, the Express has really gone to town on him. Actually, we've left his name off there. Should I be embarrassed about that, Mike?
No, I don't think you should.
Okay. No. So there we are. This is part of what he says. And if you go to the Express site, you can look at video clips to see this. He says, this is a dangerous fantasy. The idea there's going to be a European Air Force, a European army, is simply not true. This is a dangerous fantasy. And then later, he's shown in a little handheld video clip, clearly admitting there is going to be one. So gross hypocrisy. But what does the man do? Well, he tours universities, basically deceiving youngsters as the true intent of the European Union. And as David Ellis has spelt out, this is full military union with the development and procurement process. And UK's nuclear deterrent is being handed to the French prior to going under full EU control. And this is a little bit more of the article. It says, well, according to Nick Clegg, he says this: the United Kingdom is out. And then crucially, what the European Union and what the UK do while they are separate. If we were to revisit this in 40 years' time, And in the meantime, we've turned ourselves into some bargain basement offshore Dubai economy, and the European Union has created an army, then clearly it will be more tricky. I'd just like your opinion live there, Mike, on what do you think he means by a Dubai economy? I think he knows what that is, because he's been part of the team working to absolutely destroy Britain's manufacturing base. We're just going to be reliant on the Middle East buying up bits of the country.
Yes.
So this is selling off the public infrastructure. So we draw your attention to this article, which has just gone up on the UK column. Some really excellent work by the team having a look at what's been really going on. But we now know that people blowing the whistle on matters to do with government policy are risking imprisonment. And we're saying here, blow the whistle on your government committing treason on defence. And it appears that we are now risking imprisonment. Is that correct?
Well, indeed, you brought this up last Wednesday, but the mainstream media are catching up now. So the Register on Friday, planned Espionage Act would jail journals and whistleblowers as spies. With the Telegraph saying journalists who obtained leaked official material could be sent to prison under new proposals. The Guardian saying the Guardian view on official secrets, new proposals threaten democracy. And the subheadline there is the Law Commission's proposals appear tailored to stop The Guardian ever again publishing something like the Snowden files. So what are they talking about? Well, it's this document, which is called Protection for Official Data, a consultation paper. Now, this is a consultation being run by the Law Commission. It's an ongoing consultation and it's a public consultation. So there's still time for people to make submissions to this if they wish to do that. And the Law Society saying that the relevant they've published this consultation paper, which suggests ways to improve the law around the protection of official information. They're saying the relevant statutes, the Official Secrets Act in particular, are being independently reviewed to ensure that the law is keeping pace with the challenges of the 21st century. We, the Law Commission, have made a number of provisional conclusions as to how the legislation could be improved, and we believe will enhance the protection that is currently afforded to official information. The open public consultation on the protection of official data will run until the 3rd of April. We welcome views. So interestingly enough, back at the start of February, the Telegraph ran this headline, Reforms to Official Secrets Act are once in a century opportunity to modernise anti-spying laws, says the Law Commission's David Ormerod. Once in a lifetime is what he's saying. So the review is going to consider the relationship between the legislative regime and the internal disciplinary measures to which public servants and others are subject. It's also going to consider the powers available to investigators, the relationship between the criminal law and any civil remedies, and the effect of technological change on the way in which the data is stored, shared and understood. And Ormerod, in his article in the Telegraph said, protecting official data is important because public servants often have access to information that is vital to Britain's economic and national security. That's why in the 2015, the Cabinet Office, on behalf of the government, I don't think so, the Cabinet Office asked the Law Commission to review the laws that protect official information and make sure that our security was fit for the 21st century. He says the Law Commission is independent and we make suggestions based on evidence. We believe that this independence is crucial to ensuring public confidence in our conclusions. And he says that for us, it is the Law Commission, it's about getting it right. This is a once-in-a-century opportunity to conduct a wholesale review, and our comprehensive consultation paper reflects that. Currently, the Official Secrets Act 1911 provides the principal legal protection in the United Kingdom against espionage, despite the fact that it was enacted in the run-up to the First World War. And so it goes on. And he's basically saying that he wants to hear people's views. In a century, the world has changed. We think it's time the laws around protecting official information do too. But of course, the key point here is the potential penalties if there's any kind of prosecution under this new legislation, yeah, which would rise from 2 years to 14 years.
That's correct, yeah.
And he is actually complaining. In this, the example he gives is that somebody leaking information that would be considered an official secret would get the same type of penalty as somebody leaking somebody's personal data for example, somebody who won the national lottery. And he thinks that that's wrong, so which is why they're proposing 14 years.
Yeah, this is spin, of course, isn't
absolutely.
It? It's spin. But everywhere we look, the track record is that those who blow the whistle on wrongdoing, criminal action, fraud, corruption, whatever it is, the state absolutely hammers them. We've seen this time after time with the whistleblowers over child abuse, whether it's Melanie Shaw still in prison or it's the Metropolitan Police officer blowing the whistle on the cover-up of child abuse, rape, trafficking, murder. He was branded mentally ill and pay suspended. So every time the government's caught out, they attack. Exactly the same with NHS doctors warning about the killing which is now going on inside the NHS, and I don't use that term lightly. And we've now got the same thing with the military. I mean, if we have a look at the SA-80 rifle when it came out, clearly the thing was not fit for purpose. So soldiers armed with it were put at grave risk. What do they do? Continue to die or see comrades die as a result of that equipment, or do they try and speak out? So what the government is now saying is, no, 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 we don't want anybody who's near any government-controlled information to speak out because that would be too dangerous for the government. We want you put in prison. Is there anybody out there who can't see that Theresa May, as Prime Minister, is creating a dictatorship? Every single step is coming in, the privatisations of the prison, the fact that there will be no juries in court. You won't even appear in court. You'll simply go through a Skype link. The evidence is becoming overwhelming. So what have we got to do? We've got to challenge it. I think the Guardian journalists are beginning to get a little bit wobbly on this one, having a look at that article, Mike, because you did get the feeling they're saying there's something not quite right here, but it's a situation they've helped create.
Absolutely.
Well, bring in Trump, clearly the most popular US president, according to Western and UK and American media. But he's just fired a missile at that famous fighter, the Lockheed F-35. So this was his tweet. He says, based on the tremendous cost and cost overruns of the Lockheed Martin F-35, I've asked Boeing to price out a comparative F-18 Super Hornet. Now, the Guardian picked up on this. Actually, there's a thing. Are they going to be sent to prison? Because,
no,
you know, they're reporting on American military matters.
That's not covered by official secrets, of course.
Well, not yet. I'm sure it'll come in. So here's the Guardian headline. Lockheed F-35 fighter project in doubt after Trump tweet encourages rival Boeing. So the meat of this article was pointing out that the moment that tweet came out, Lockheed shares fell 2% and those of Boeing rose 0.7%. And it said this, while the F-35 program has been dogged by problems and costs have escalated to an estimated $379 billion, it is significantly newer than the F-18 Super Hornet Trump referred to. The aircraft does not have the same stealth capabilities. And we just had this one in. The F-35 stealth capabilities drove up the cost and its usefulness has not yet been demonstrated. Well, that's a little bit of a shame, isn't it, Mike? Now, remember, this is the aircraft. The B version is the version that the Royal Navy says it's going to get. And we have two very large aircraft carriers with no aircraft at the moment waiting for delivery of these fine F-35s. So, Mike, you said you went a little bit wobbly when you saw this headline.
Well, first of all, we should just take note that this is Popular Mechanics, of course, one of the partners of the World Government Summit. So this is good. We know this is a reputable source there. But this was an absolutely fantastic fake news headline. F-35 scores impressive 15-1 kill ratio at Red Flag War Games. And I thought to myself, oh my goodness, does this thing actually work?
So let's have a look.
And what they say as you read down the article is the F-35 and F-22 Raptor pair up to make a particularly deadly team, according to the pilots. The Raptor uses its advanced air maneuverability to shield the F-35 from airborne threats while the F-35 relays data to the F-22 to paint a clear picture of the battlefield. In other words, it is a piece of rubbish. It is a flying brick that isn't maneuverable enough to
defend itself.
It requires to be defended by an older aircraft. And in fact, its only purpose, therefore, is to use its so-called advanced avionics to gather a picture of the battlefield and relay that to aircraft that can actually do the job.
Yeah. So where does that take the Royal Navy? Well, let's have a look at that, because I think we can help you out. If you go to the Royal Navy's website, of course, there's big, boastful images of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. So the Royal Navy's new F-35 fighter needs, quote, shielding from airborne threats. That's pretty useful to take a fighter to sea that needs protection. I think that's pretty powerful. I can imagine overseas nations really quaking at the thought of that. But the Royal Navy does not have any F-22 Raptors or any other aircraft to do the protecting.
Indeed.
It's all looking a little bit wobbly here, Mike, at this point.
Yep.
But, of course, the operational Sea Harriers and their aircraft carriers were scrapped.
Did they need older aircraft flying around the skies to protect them?
No, the Harriers, for their age, were capable of doing an extremely good job. And, of course, the plans to upgrade the Harrier to considerably enhance their performance were already well underway. So what did the government do? Let's scrap all of the British effort, make sure all those British jobs are scrapped, and let's deliberately buy an aircraft, which at the moment, what did you describe it as?
Flying brick.
Okay. Well, if that is not bad enough, I think we should bring in the Russians, because the Russians simply laughing at the first Sea Lord, Admiral Philip Jones.
Are you reapplying for your job?
Well, Mike, I suspect I might not be that popular anymore. But here's Russia Today's headline: Salty Sea Dogs, Royal Navy resorting to sailors age 55 plus to fill the recruitment gap. This is Mad Hatter's Tea Party, because when you look into what's going on here, apart from anything else, they're having to recruit over 55s, particularly. To man those aircraft carriers, because they've got rid of all the experience. So the Mail had more on this, and it gets even more bizarre. That basically, it says this: take a pay cut to duck war. Soldiers are offered a 3-day week and a pay deal to dodge frontline fighting and make the army more family friendly. And if you're a very tough special forces man or woman, or something in between now, of course, you can sign up to this as well. So you can become special forces, but you don't actually fight.
Right.
So this is good. Now, of course, it says that the MOD have got wrong priorities, but of course, the Mail simply doesn't understand what's going on here. And I'm not being funny. I'm not being sarcastic. The Daily Mail is looking at this with a normal sort of mindset, saying, well, this is ridiculous, it doesn't make sense. But of course, if the government's objective is to destroy the British armed forces, then this makes perfect sense, because this is reducing the armed forces to complete, I can't even describe it really, nothingness. And if you think the Telegraph is going to assist on these matters, well, I'm afraid not. This is part of a tweet I pushed out at the weekend. On Friday, we were talking about the fact that the Telegraph had said that all of Britain's nuclear attack submarines were out of action. We asked where they got the story. They said the Sun, and they got very aggressive. Well, within 4 hours, they'd posted a rather different story. Here's the story. So it went from all of the attack submarines are out of action to Ministry of Defence denies Britain's entire fleet of attack submarines are out of action. And in that report, there is no investigative journalism as to what the real situation is. So the Telegraph, were they blackmailed? Was this part of a D-notice? Were they warned off? We've no way of knowing. But one minute, none of these submarines are operational. The next minute, the Telegraph does as the government tells them. Dictatorship, Mike.
Fake news.
Fake news.
Yes. Well, let's continue on the fake news theme, because here we go. The Independent with a fake news headline today: Brexit, if EU referendum were held today, Remain would win, poll shows. And I have to say, this is one of the examples of why the mainstream media is collapsing in a heap, because they rely on polls. They rely on polls for economic data. They rely on polls for everything. And it's all nonsense. So just as a reminder, I thought we would see what the headline was on The Independent, the front page headline on The Independent, the day before the referendum for leaving the European Union. And European referendum live, populist poll on eve of vote puts Remain 10 points ahead, leave on 55%. Latest updates. So it's exactly the same headline, but they didn't get the result. Right. So is there any validity to today's headline? Don't think so.
Probably not.
No. And what else is going on fake news wise? Well, many of the mainstream media published comments from Oana Lungescu, who is NATO spokesperson. And of course, she was speaking to one source, which was BBC Trending. Well, we'll just show what BBC Trending is. There you go. This is BBC Trending. It says, explaining the stories the world is sharing on social media. That's what BBC Trending
well,
is about.
I'm relieved now, Mike, because I was worried about fake news on social media. And BBC Reality Check only checking two items a day.
Yes.
But now we can go to BBC Trending.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah,
so let's get her back up. Here she is. And what she said to the BBC was she was talking about Russia, of course, because it's all about Russia. It's a way not to convince people, but to confuse them, not to provide an alternative viewpoint, but to divide public opinion and ultimately undermine our ability to understand what's going on. What do you think she was talking about?
Was she actually talking English there?
Well, she is. But what she's talking about is Russia's continuing influence on the fake news agenda through outlets such as Sputnik and RT, because as far as she's concerned, those are the fake news outlets yeah. in the world, and also the use of social media. So Russia is using social media and its two main media platforms not to convince people, but to confuse them, not to provide an alternative viewpoint, but to divide public opinion and ultimately undermine our ability to understand what's going on.
Right, but we shouldn't worry because Iwana is looking after our best interests.
Absolutely, because everything that she says is post-truth.
Is post-truth.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's continue the pattern and bring in Victoria. This is a lady who's been very outspoken. Victoria Derbyshire have been very outspoken, of course, on a number of issues. She got involved in the Hampstead abuse case. That was, of course, complete nonsense, I think I'm right in saying, according to Victoria.
According to her, yeah.
Yeah. And what's she been tweeting out? Well, Mike picked this one up because she's now starting an attack on Mackenzie Friends. Now, this is very subtle because, of course, the example she's chosen are Mackenzie Friends who were charging a large amount of money. In all the time I've been dealing with Mackenzie Friends and in the limited times that I've acted as a Mackenzie Friend in court, of course, that was just done on a help basis. But no, Victoria has discovered people who are charging and then they're not doing their job. And what's the issue? Well, it's to do with child cases and social services. But the spin by Victoria is, of course, she doesn't say why is it that families, mums and dads, parents are turning to Mackenzie Friends to try and get their children back. Why is it the state is taking these children? She doesn't do the background research. So what is she tweeting out? It's spun news.
Yes. Right. Now, of course, we've been covering the White Helmets for quite some time, Brian. And we sort of noticed, if you remember a few months ago, that there seems to be a global colour revolution going on at the moment, driven by the usual Soros NGOs, and that the chosen colour was purple. Yeah. And we asked, were we going to get some purple helmets? And in fact, it looks like we do have them now. They do exist. They're called Violet. Well, here's their website. Before we get to the website, here they are digging the road in Idlib in Syria to plant a tree, because that's what they're doing. They're planting trees. So they're a humanitarian organization, very much like the White Helmets, except they're dressed in purple. So what worries me slightly is when you start looking at the website, it's all about children. 3 million children need medical treatment, apparently. They're running projects, robot projects in the north of Syria. As I say, this is in Idlib. Now, when Aleppo was liberated, and all those people, all those terrorists from East Aleppo were removed. Where did they go, Brian? Well, they went to Idlib. Idlib is the place which is the main ISIS center in Syria at the moment. Well, they say about themselves, from the beginning of the Syrian conflict and the deterioration of the humanitarian situation in 2011, the unleashing of the humanitarian response was necessary to attempt any lessening of the tragic reality unfolding in Syria, which has continued to deteriorate at all levels with the slow international response. A number of aspiring young volunteers, because it's all about volunteers, began to work spontaneously and voluntarily by focusing initially on support materials, food, and collecting in-kind materials and cash to be distributed to people affected by conflict to secure their basic needs. So real Robin Hood style operation here. It sounds wonderful, doesn't it? But when we actually start looking, we find the usual suspects. This organization, for example. Well, before we even get to that, the website is registered to Mohammed Jihad Beth, Asfari Foundation, seed funders of the Syria campaign, funders of the White Helmets. We're right into the same NGO infrastructure that created the White Helmets, and this lot as well, IHH. And the orphan population is the headline. This is the headline on their main website. The orphan population in the world, of the world, 5 times higher than Turkey's population. So we're into children here. This is pretty nasty looking, in my opinion. Let's have a look at what they've got. They've got a $38 million budget at the moment. And look at the partners that we've got. We've got, who's that on the left there? Rescue. This is absolutely one of the organizations behind the White Helmets. We've got CARE. We've got IHH, as we say. Who else have we got? Oh, Save the Children. We've got GOAL and World Vision. So lots of children's charities involved in this. This does not look pleasant to me. Speaking to Vanessa Bealey this morning, she is doing a lot of research on this. I will contribute to that as well. But she was making the point that lots of children were kidnapped at the start of the Aleppo occupation, let's call it. Those children are now going to be teenagers. And her view, just a view at this point in time, is that these children, now teenagers, are going to be used as human shields in Idlib. This is pretty nasty, pretty insidious, all under the blanket of humanitarianism, as usual.
Yeah, and remarkable that this organisation, which is helping Syrian children, says it's helping Syrian children, doesn't say to the UK government, can you tell us why you're not doing anything to track down the missing 345 missing Syrian children in UK, even though we've got Tim Farron saying, yes, I think many of those will have been trafficked, abused, raped, whatever. They should really be asking the UK government why the UK government isn't defending children. But they won't be doing that, I can guarantee.
Well, a very good question to ask is, what role does Idlib play as a staging place for human trafficking? Because this is a really important question, and I think perhaps we might be getting a clue here as to what's going on.
Yeah, everything comes back to follow the money, follow the children. Right, well, can we end on some good news? I think we can. The title is Smell the Fear, and it come back to The Guardian here. MPs say Commons watchdog risks revealing their home addresses. So this is Angus. I've forgotten his surname. This is an SNP gentleman, and he's very upset, as apparently many other MPs are, that the Commons has been printing information due to about expenses, and this can reveal where people live. And these MPs are getting very, very, very frightened, Mike. Now, of course, there can only be one reason: either that they think there's going to be a massive Al-Qaeda or ISIS move to track down British MPs in their little comfortable homes, or more likely, I think these are MPs who are beginning to understand the outrage of the British public as the public discovers that the country is being destroyed by our own politicians. Mm. But what better evidence could we have that these people are starting to get very, very nervous indeed? They're not doing anything wrong. The nasty public are just simply getting the wrong idea of what they are doing.
Angus Robertson, according to the chat box, is a reminder.
Angus Robertson. Yeah, well, there we are. If anybody's got him as a local constituency MP, perhaps you might consider dropping him a line and asking why he's so frightened, and perhaps you could help possibly knit him a teddy bear or something. Well, there we are. Several people, as we're giving today's news, talking about living in a fantasy land. We smile while we're giving this news, but it's becoming more and more difficult not to, because we're simply reporting bizarre news, which only makes sense when you realise that the policies, which seem to lack total common sense, are designed to destroy the fabric of this country. How do we deal with it, expose it? So what do you need to do? Get out there teaching other people, tell the truth, write, tweet, email, challenge those MPs, and above all, get into the professions, talking to people, the police, the military, the NHS, and of course, school teachers and anybody else with the education of youngsters under their belt. That's it for today. We will be back tomorrow at same time, and we hope to have David Ellis with us to talk more about what's happening to the British military. That's it. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.